All right, we are live on Twitter and YouTube, and join me now here on the Ari Mayrov NFL show. He is a senior analyst here at PFF and the co-host of the very popular PFF NFL podcast. First time guest here on the show, it is Steve Palazzolo. Steve, thanks for coming on and making some time.
Yeah, of course, Ari. Appreciate you having me, buddy.
No, absolutely. So, you know, here we are, week one of the NFL preseason. Football season is officially back. We will probably have some regular starters getting some playing time this week, but for the most part, we'll be seeing a lot of young guys and players fighting for roster spots. What I want to do here today is give out our top 10 things we'll be keeping an eye on throughout this preseason. It could be player related, team related, whatever you want. I'll do five, you'll do five. We'll each take turns here. And Steve, since you are our guest on the show, I'll let you kick us off.
All right. Well, appreciate it. So let me start with, I think there are some season driven storylines where we're going to get some information in the preseason. So I'm going to start with the Packers wide receivers. Them losing Davante Adams when Aaron Rodgers is trying to make his last run at a Super Bowl. So what do they have left at receiver? We've got all the buzz from Romeo Doubs coming out of camp, the fourth rounder out of Nevada. Can he do that in games? Is he going to go out there and look like a top wide receiver in preseason games? And if he does that end up changing our perception of the Packers? Because right now it's who are the receivers? Who's he going to throw to? It was second rounder Christian Watson and Sammy Watkins and Alan Lazard. So trying to like sort out that Packers wide receiver room and if Doubs is as good as the camp hype.
Yeah, you know, interesting, because we always talk about gaining Aaron Rodgers' trust is such a big deal. It seems like he's been doing that so far throughout camp. Now, Rodgers probably won't play in the preseason, so we probably won't get to see both of them in action. But I want to see definitely how he does. And this is somebody who really produced back-to-back 1,000-yard receiving seasons at Nevada, slipped to the fourth round. We haven't gotten to see Christian Watson at all, really, because he's been injured throughout camp. And I believe Sam Monson was on this podcast a few months ago, and he mentioned this is like the first time Aaron Rodgers is going to a season where he doesn't have that top-tier receiver. There is no Davante Adams. There is no Jordy Nelson, Donald Driver, Gary Jennings. Who is going to be that guy for this team? There's always that one rookie every year selected outside of round one who just pops off in his rookie year. Last year was Amon-Ra St. Brown, taken in the fourth round. We'll see if Doubs could be that guy this year. Fourth round NFC North wide receiver. Definitely one thing to keep an eye on here in the preseason will be that Packers wide receiver group. My first thing here is going to be the Giants. They play tonight. I want to see their offensive line. And Brian Daboll came out and said, we're going to play everyone. All our guys are going to play. And I just remember last year when Joe Judge did the same thing and the Giants started everyone in their first preseason game against the Jets and the offensive line was just god awful. And I actually went back to check the numbers today. They finished that game with a 26.6 pass blocking grade as a unit in that game. It was so bad. And we know how bad it's been for years now. And this new regime made significant moves this offseason by drafting Evan Neal, signing Mark Lewinsky, signing John Feliciano. Andrew Thomas was pretty decent last year when he was healthy. We're all talking about Daniel Jones and Saquon Barkley, and rightfully so. Both those guys are in the final year of their contracts. But I feel like this offensive line will dictate a lot about how the Giants ultimately end up doing offensively this year.
It's interesting that you could go back to last year's preseason game, and a lot of times it's like, oh, don't look too much into the preseason. And then other times things are telling, you know, in the offensive line. Yes, I do remember that game. Week one last year, every single snap getting whooped, especially in pass protection. And the Daniel Jones evaluation is interesting because I don't have a ton of confidence in Daniel Jones as maybe the guy that I would want to invest in long term. But I think he's a starting caliber quarterback in the NFL. But have we ever really seen him with a good offensive line? Have we actually ever seen him with a good enough situation? Even the investment that they've made at receiver, Kadarius Toney in the first round and Kenny Golladay in free agency, hardly saw them on the field last year. So as much as I don't think that Daniel Jones is all of a sudden just going to be this top 10 caliber quarterback this year, has he been put in position for us to even see that? And I think the offensive line is absolutely one of those areas. You mentioned Andrew Thomas, a great jump for him in year two. Evan Neal is a a fantastic prospect, but as Andrew Thomas showed, sometimes the adjustment for a rookie tackle is rough, and then they figure it out year two or three. That is one of those positions in the PFF grading system. Sometimes takes until year three or four before a guy can really improve, but those guys do get better over time. So I'm with you as far as, you know, taking a look at some of those offseason moves. You have big moves like Evan Neal, and then the ones you mentioned, Mark Lewinsky, John Feliciano. Moves that I always use the phrase creep back toward average, right? If you're really bad, you just get some solid players up front, and the Giants could absolutely have the pieces. But if it looks bad again right away, it could be a long year for the Giants.
Yeah, I think you could probably make an argument. This is the best situation Daniel Jones has been in, whether it's coaching staff with Daboll and Mike Kafka, who many people believe he's a future head coach in this league as well. But the coaching staff, the people around him when it comes to the skill position group, where they've had the pieces there for a couple of years, just they're never on the field at the same time. Whether it is Saquon, Kenny Galladay, Tony, Evan Engram, all those guys were never on the field at the same time. Now they're all there. Hopefully they could stay healthy. This is essentially his last chance after his fifth-year option was declined, and we'll see how they do kicking it off here tonight. As I said, Brian Daboll mentioned everyone will be starting there tonight versus the Patriots. All right, Steve, who do you have here for your second preseason topic?
All right, my next topic, it's always about the rookies for me. I just love the first look at quarterbacks, other positions too, but let's start with the rookie quarterback, Kenny Pickett in particular with the Steelers. We already announced Mitchell Trubisky is going to be the starter. What are the expectations for Kenny Pickett? It was such a weird draft where I think everybody assumed because it's quarterback, we're going to see first round caliber quarterbacks. We're going to see guys go in the first round, and Kenny Pickett was the only quarterback. And then it was like, all right, well, all these other quarterbacks are going to go day two. And well, they didn't. They went, I mean, they didn't go round two. They went round three or later. And with Pickett, was it just one team that loved him? Was he really a day two type of prospect? And just the Steelers just said, hey, we need a guy. Because Pickett's not getting those first or even second team reps consistently now in camp. So I want to see Pickett. I want to see what he looks like. You know, a year ago at this time too, Kenny Pickett was just this, you know, he's a pretty good college quarterback. He's done some nice things at Pittsburgh. And then he really broke out for 1 year. So what is that after starting for four, right? I mean, starting for four total seasons. What does a one-year wonder like a Kenny Pickett, has he really turned his game around, or is he closer to that? Just that he's a pretty good college quarterback, and he's going to actually struggle to leapfrog Mitchell Trubisky and Mason Rudolph on the depth chart. I think we're going to learn a lot about Pickett during this preseason.
Yeah, and Mitchell Trubisky is going to be the one starting on Saturday against Seattle, and I think everyone anticipates him being the week one starter. The thing is, and I know Steelers fans don't want to hear this, Mason Rudolph has apparently been lights out at camp, and I know for a fact he has many fans in that building. I'm really curious to see how they eventually have this depth chart when the season starts. Will they actually put Mason Rudolph at three, or they even put him at two, because he has been that good? And I remember when the Rams did that with Jared Goff, and as a number one overall pick, they made him the number three quarterback to start the year. If Mason Rudolph is doing well, and there are people on that coaching staff and in the front office who really still believe there is some untapped potential there, I'm curious to see what they do with him. And if he becomes maybe the backup to start the year, and they continue to slowly ease in Kenny Pickett, and eventually I think we all anticipate him starting at some point, probably later in the year, depending on how the Steelers record is looking. And of course, we all know Mike Tomlin in his entire coaching career has never had a losing record as a head coach. However, this is the first year going into it without Ben Roethlisberger. It'll be very interesting to see how they do. So again, they have their first preseason game coming up here on Saturday versus the Seahawks, who have their own competition, by the way, as well. For my next one, I'll keep the rookie trend going here, and I'll keep it to the AFC North. The Ravens have a tight end, Isaiah Likely, there, fourth round pick, and there's been just so much hype coming out around him throughout their training camp, and he has just been catching everything that's been coming his way. He has shown an ability to find space and get separation. He's been flashing this large catch radius. Lamar Jackson is out here calling him a baby Mark Andrews. Andrews then comes out and says he actually does see some of himself in Isaiah Likely, and then John Harbaugh comes out yesterday and is like, this guy's going to have a big role in the offense. So I don't know exactly what the plan here is for him, but whenever you have all these players who are just basically nonstop talking about it, and it's not like the reporters are asking about what do you think about this player, it's that the players are just saying it on their own and mentioning that this guy keep an eye on him. Tony Jefferson, another player who's like, this guy's going to be a problem for defenses. And again, he said that out of nowhere without being asked about him. So I want to see Isaiah Likely in this offense. You know, we're always talking about the receiver groups that Lamar Jackson has. We'll see if a guy like Rashad Bateman could take that next step. But Mark Andrews and maybe Isaiah Likely being that guy who could step up and be a legit receiving option for Lamar Jackson, I want to see how he does here in the preseason.
Yeah, Likely was a fantastic receiver in college. And, you know, the interesting thing about the Ravens offense, when Lamar won the MVP in 2019, it was a three tight end system, right? It was Mark Andrews, and they had Hayden Hurst at the time, Nick Boyle as their run blocker. So that is probably where their strength lies, is at that position, especially if Likely is as good as all the hype here. And it does mitigate some of the issues at receiver, because I did think last year at this time, the Ravens may have had their best receiving core when Sammy Watkins was there, Marquise Brown was still there. And then it's like, all right, now we're going to throw Rashad Bateman into that mix as well. That can be really good. But now it's Bateman, right? There's a lot of pressure on him to be the number one. There's some complementary pieces, but this could easily be just another tight end driven passing game. And I think the Ravens are okay with that. They're still going to run the ball more than any other team in the league, maybe other than the Titans. They still want to run the ball. You still want to have that run pass type of option with the tight end on the field, keeping defenses off balance. And I think, you know, Likely as a complementary piece to Mark Andrews, who he took a big step forward last year too. He showed he was QB proof. Doesn't matter who's out there. He's a top five tight end. So maybe we are sleeping on the Ravens receivers if you get this other contribution, particularly at the tight end position.
Yep, Likely caught 133 passes for over 2,000 yards and 27 touchdowns during his college career. And he actually earned a PFF grade of over 90 last season. And again, the Ravens took him the fourth round. The way the players are just raving about him and the way the coaches are talking about him, it makes me want to see how he does there and if he actually does become a key contributor come here this season. All right, Steve, who do you have for your third topic here in the preseason?
I had other receiving weapons to look at. Well, maybe I'll pause that one for a second. I'm going to flip back to other rookies, this time edge defender. So we saw Trayvon Walker already in the Hall of Fame game for some snaps. And I mean, I just want to see Trayvon Walker and Aiden Hutchinson in particular. After debating these two players for a while, I didn't even think we'd be debating those two players. And Trayvon Walker, it's like, hey, this guy's a really good athlete. And he had one of the best workouts we've ever seen at the NFL draft. And it was like, I think he's going to go top 10. Think he's going to go top three. And then finally, we think he's going to go number one to the Jaguars after I think most people expected it was going to be Aiden Hutchinson. So it's, for me, it's a great discussion of Aiden Hutchinson and his production. He's not a bad athlete by any means. He's a very good athlete, but he has the college production. Trayvon Walker did not have the production, but he was a part of this incredible defense where he's not putting up PFF grade, pressure numbers, sack totals. If you want to just look at traditional stats, none of that is there. But we've never seen a workout like Trayvon Walker. We've seen Danelle Hunter workout similar, but you add 20 pounds and that's Trayvon Walker. Better workout, bigger, longer, stronger. And in 15 plus snaps the other night, you can kind of see that. You saw the skills in Trayvon Walker. So I want to see his development as a football player versus Aiden Hutchinson, who's supposed to be the polished, ready-to-go prospect. Is that actually true? Or were the Jags right? Will we learn anything about their decision here at number one overall, picking Trayvon Walker?
Yep, and Aiden Hutchinson over here recently went viral for his Billie Jean singing on Hard Knocks. That was absolutely incredible. Let me just ask you, just overall on Trayvon Walker, you mentioned the 15 snaps in the Hall of Fame game. What did you think of how he played overall in that game?
I think if you're looking at him from as a Jaguars fan and saying, should I be optimistic about him in 16 snaps, whatever it was, be optimistic. You know, like there was a tackle that he could have made that he should, but he beat a block to get there, right? He showed really good hands. The sack, I know, you know, at PFF, we've always pushed back on just don't look at sack totals. And it's easy to say, well, he had one sack in one game, therefore he's good. The sack was really the quarterback, Jarrett Stidham, stepped up right into him. It doesn't mean it's a bad play by Trayvon Walker, but not every sack is created equal. You know, if he, you know, whips the left tackle and then gets it, that's a more impressive play. So he did a nice job to disengage, get the sack. He had a nice pressure early on, but it turned into a penalty. So there was a lot of physical plays that you saw of Trayvon Walker were really impressive, but one ends in a penalty, ends in a missed tackle. So you got to cut down on some of those. But overall, physically, he looked like the imposing number one overall pick that he should be.
Yep, and the Jaguars are one of those teams where they made so many moves this offseason after back-to-back years of having the number one overall pick. Their fans are just hopeful to have some normalcy there now with Doug Peterson as the head coach and Trayvon Walker, who I think we can make an argument, probably the least talked about number one overall pick in like recent history. It's honestly incredible. We barely talked about him at all throughout OTAs and into the preseason now. We'll see how they do here. Again, they have the Browns coming up on Friday, and as of right now, Deshaun Watson is actually slated to be starting that game for Cleveland. For my next one, I'm going to go back to Green Bay, and I want to see Jordan Love. I mean, we talked about Romeo Doubs before. I want to see the guy who will most likely be throwing to him. I mean, the Packers continue to insist that he's gotten better, and they've seen a lot of growth. We saw him last year in that one game against Kansas City. It wasn't so great. Aaron Rodgers obviously is back, which is a big deal. There was some concern he might not have been back this year, but he's back there on a new deal. But there's still a lot of talk that maybe this could be his last year. Maybe he'll retire. So we don't even know, is Jordan Love the future in Green Bay? Could he be a potential trade asset come next year? Whatever the case is, the most likely situation right now is the only playing time he's getting right now is here in the preseason. And I would like to see how he does in this preseason, throwing to some of these young receiving options that the Packers have, and if he could show that he could actually be an NFL quarterback. And I think, as I said, we probably won't see him in the regular season unless something happens to Aaron Rodgers or it's in garbage time. So this is the time to get to see him right now. And I want to see how he does there here for Green Bay.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I'll be watching Jordan Love closely. How much do we buy into anything Aaron Rodgers is saying right now? He's putting all of his receivers into the Hall of Fame. And Jordan Love is on a similar trajectory as himself back in 2005 to 2007 when Rodgers was just sitting there behind Brett Favre developing into one of the best quarterbacks of all time. So, yes, we'll learn a little bit about Jordan Love's development. Even last year in the preseason against Buffalo when he had some extended time, you saw the roller coaster ride that Jordan Love was even at Utah State, right? You saw the special throws. He had a couple big time throws. He also threw basically a Hail Mary in a non Hail Mary situation, just lobbing it into the end zone. So you just don't know when you're going to get these crazy decisions from Jordan Love, but also the really talented plays, talented with his arm, talented outside the pocket, making those throws. So he's got to clean up some of that decision-making. So yeah, Jordan Love always a story to see him because we also knew that he was going to be a developmental quarterback. You know, this is one of those, it's a bigger story for me in today's NFL too, because there used to be a time, Ari, I don't know if you know this, but I'm a big Mark Brunell fan. Mark Brunell's like my all-time favorite player way back, right? He was a developmental quarterback, right? He sat for Green Bay and then he kind of eased his way into the lineup and he got better. And other quarterbacks, Brad Johnson and Rich Gannon, all these guys kind of bloomed late, but they probably had enough practice time to develop back in the old NFL. So to me, this is like a bigger storyline for the NFL too. Can you actually draft a quarterback and literally just sit him and let him develop for a couple of years? It's an old school way of doing things. You don't have as much practice time. You got to pay the guy a lot. If Jordan Love is randomly good in a year and you have to re-sign him, you got to pay him a lot of money. Maybe it's not the best investment overall. Can you actually develop a quarterback? So I think that is a storyline on top of Jordan Love specifically is an interesting one to watch.
So, you know what, let me ask you this question, because, you know, the idea of letting a quarterback sit and not playing him, it's not a big thing anymore, but it's also becoming a bit of an issue here in Green Bay right now because he's entering his third year. Assuming he doesn't play much this year, they have to make a decision on his fifth year option after this season. And we're talking about, I don't know what the number is, but it's going to be at least $10 million, probably a little bit more. It might be less, but it's somewhere in that neighborhood is my point. What should the Packers do in that scenario come next year? Assuming Aaron Rodgers is still the quarterback, are you picking that up or are you, you know what, one more year and we'll see what happens from there?
I think it's tough to pick up an option on Love if you know you're going to have Aaron Rodgers, you know, even if it's for just one more year, because then, you know, maybe you get that 1 year to take a look at Jordan Love. Yeah, maybe it ends up becoming worth it depending on where he is. Let me see what he looks like here in the preseason first, right? But then it's difficult because you're kind of year to year with Aaron Rodgers. And then if Jordan Love is good and you do want to re-sign him, then what is he worth? Is he even a bargain when he becomes a free agent? He's, you know, it's kind of like Jimmy Garoppolo making a lot of money without any starting experience. And there's a lot of risk in that. You know, I think the Niners are probably happy with the majority of Garoppolo's time because they made a Super Bowl run. But he was also injured 3 out of 5 years. That was part of the risk that they had there. So it's a tough one, man. It is really tough. And I think that is part of why you don't see quarterbacks sitting, because at some point it's like, well, I got to pick up a fifth-year option, which is expensive. And then they hit free agency, and there's no middle class of free agency for quarterbacks. That would be the one thing. If you could find a decent middle class deal for Jordan Love, maybe you can keep him around.
Right. Like, the only real comparison to this is the Jimmy Garoppolo situation with New England. But since he was a second round pick, there was no fifth year option to pick up. So the Patriots basically dealt him before he became a free agent later that year for a second round pick and got whatever they could at that point. Of course, they never envisioned Tom Brady to be playing still when they originally drafted Jimmy. And here we are in 2022 and Tom Brady is still playing, of course. So that is the situation that we are in there. But it's definitely a fascinating situation. Again, like you said, let's just see how he plays here in the preseason. But come next year, Green Bay definitely has a big decision there to make with Jordan Love. All right, for my fourth one here, I'm going to go with who is calling the plays for the Patriots. And it's an interesting situation. I mean, it sounds like people are saying it's Matt Patricia, but really don't know yet. Patricia, Judge, maybe Belichick will just do it. Maybe it's a team effort. I'm assuming maybe we'll find out in the preseason, but it sounds like Mac Jones and the rest of the stars are actually not going to be playing tonight. But I don't know what the final solution will be. And I've been, throughout this entire process, I've been on a more of a wait and see mode. But I actually want to throw this idea at you, because we've always talked about how Bill likes to look for edges when it comes to the way he thinks and the way he does things as a coach, and even whenever he's on the personnel side. Obviously, when they lost Josh McDaniels, it was a very big loss for them. You never want to lose your assistants. I was wondering if them losing Josh, and let's just say they replaced him with somebody else, that guy ended up doing really well. Somebody else is going to coach that guy as well, and then you're hitting the reset button once again next year. Do you feel like Bill is looking around and saying, you know what, I'm not going to hire anybody from the outside. I'll let Matt Patricia, Joe Judge, these former head coaches who probably won't get second chances elsewhere, let them do it. I'll help out as well. But at least moving forward, I'll have a consistent offensive play call here where nobody will be taking him away from me. Does that make some sense to you?
Yeah, I mean, it's an intriguing theory there, you know, because the Patriots have continued to essentially build from within, right? It went from Charlie Weiss to Bill O'Brien, essentially, or to Josh McDaniels, Bill O'Brien, and then back to Josh McDaniels. But it's been the same offense. So I think the answer to that question, I think, Ari, is what does this offense look like? Because now all the reports are it's a new offense. It's simplified. They installed their zone running scheme first, and it's been terrible so far. They're not a zone running team. I want to know if they've actually overhauled this thing for the first time since like the Clinton administration, essentially. They've run the same offense the entire time that Bill Belichick has been there. It started with Charlie Weiss. It's the same terminology. You'd always stack more things on top of it. You would change personnel, and they interchange their personnel as well as any team. They historically have done that under Weiss and Bill O'Brien and Josh McDaniels. But the offense itself, the core of it, is the same, right? Mac Jones was running a lot of the same pass concepts that Tom Brady ran for 20 years. I want to know if that stuff's different. You know, if it is, hey, more of an outside zone running scheme and play action off of that and what it looks like to integrate these receivers, is it actually a new offense? And then I think that's going to answer some of those questions where I think the answer is like, well, Bill just wanted a reset and said, well, I've lost my last expert for this old offense, right? Josh McDaniels is my last expert in this particular system, and now it's a new system, and we're just going to start it from scratch, and we're going to build it around Mac Jones. So that's what I think is part of the answer there. Is this a new offense adjusted to Mac Jones, a new era in New England, or is there some trickeration going with who the play caller is and making sure that there's some continuity going forward? Because he just lost a lot of continuity. He lost McDaniels, other coaches, the front office has been gutted over the last couple of years, Nick Caserio, Dave Ziegler, a lot of people moving on. So there's so much turnover in New England. Maybe there is some element to Belichick saying, okay, let's find this nucleus that we're going to have going forward from a coaching standpoint.
Just overall, whenever you have a young quarterback like Mac Jones, and again, you don't want to question Bill Belichick, obviously, as like the greatest head coach ever. But then again, when you look around how he's handled this entire situation, do you feel like the way they've handled all this is the right way to do it for a young quarterback like him?
Yeah, it's a tough one. I mean, I don't know what the alternative would be. You know, you have this history in New England, again, of internal promotion. Josh McDaniels was basically a kid when he took over as a play caller, and they had one of the best offenses ever in 2007 when he was really young. I think at some point Belichick they just ran out of internal candidates, right? They ran out of and they brought them back, right? The internal candidates were guys that got jobs elsewhere and Joe Judge and Matt Patricia and brought them back. Now bringing a Matt Patricia, who I know Belichick thinks highly of, bringing a guy that's mostly spent his time on the defensive side of the ball and maybe given him more power in the offense, you know, that could be questionable because it's not always the easiest transition, but I'm sure Belichick sees some of that in himself. Historically, he's been a receivers coach. He's been on the offensive side. He's been on the defensive side. I just want to see Belichick call plays for both sides of the ball, right? Just up the ante and say, I'm going to call defensive plays, offensive plays. I'm running the show here. Let Bill Belichick just do something nobody else, I don't think, has ever done probably as a head coach.
Listen, the guy's doing everything, whether it is calling plays, running the front office as well, especially now with Caserio and Ziegler not there. I mean, he has his hands full there in New England, and I think it's definitely one of the fascinating topics throughout this preseason and probably going into the regular season as well, just to see how that offense does now that Josh is not there. All right, for your fifth and final one, Steve, what do you have here?
So I'm going to go back to the receivers here. It's the Cowboys. The Cowboys receiving core. And, you know, Dak Prescott's career trajectory, I think, is an interesting one because he was so good as a rookie. In 2017 and 18, it was they probably have the worst receiving core that we've seen since 2017 or 18. 18 is when they traded for Amari Cooper. And you started to see this increase in Dak's production. So he kind of took a dip after a really good rookie season. And since 18, when Amari Cooper was in the lineup or at least on the roster, and then Michael Gallup emerged, and then they drafted CeeDee Lamb, they've just continued to add these playmakers to this Cowboys offense. Dak's PFF grades, Dak's efficiency, everything has gone up essentially since that time. And now this is the first time where you're looking around and saying, okay, Amari Cooper's gone. They soured on him, even though overall I thought they got far more good than bad from Amari Cooper. They did get Cedric Wilson to emerge last year. He's gone in free agency. Michael Gallup's dealing with his injury. And the other interesting thing here, too, is they drafted CeeDee Lamb when it wasn't a quote-unquote need in the draft. I'm a guy that always says draft the best players, forget needs. I think this is a good example of it. Right now, the Cowboys have a massive need at receiver. So the strategy of adding CeeDee Lamb to Amari Cooper and Michael Gallup and having a Dalton Schultz emerge, that is an awesome way, I think, to create offense and win in today's NFL. And now the Cowboys have lost it. And it's CeeDee Lamb and friends. And who's going to step up? Is it third rounder Jalen Tolbert? James Washington's banged up. They're going to rely on Noah Brown. They're going to rely on someone to step up. So what do the Cowboys receivers look like? And do they have any pieces there to help out with CeeDee Lamb? Because it's not looking good so far.
Yeah, Jerry Jones actually came out the other day and said, no, we're not looking at any veteran receiving options, even though James Washington just got hurt, even though Michael Gallup missed the start of the year. Dalton Schultz obviously is there at tight end and emerged last year as a legit receiving option there for Dallas, and he's playing under the franchise tag. So he needs to have another big year for his own sake to get that contract extension that every player wants. But it is interesting just to see what they end up doing, because they have been talking a lot about Jalen Tolbert and they sound like they're very high on him, but it's just, how do you expect a young receiver, like we always talk about these young receivers and how many of them could actually do well in their first year, but at the end of the day, not everybody's actually end up playing to that level that you're expecting it to. So I'm actually curious just to see what ends up happening here, where it's like, as you said, it's CD and who else. Will they add somebody else? I've seen the name T.Y. Hilton thrown around. Maybe that would make sense. But what else do they do if it's not anyone else? I just want to go back to the beginning of the offseason when all this happened with them. when they moved on from Amari Cooper and now seeing how the wide receiver market has exploded, when that initially happened, obviously looking at it now, what was your reaction to all of it?
The interesting thing about Cooper is I just don't know what's happening behind the scenes with him. So, you know, the Raiders, I thought Amari Cooper was a good with the Raiders and they moved on from him. You know, I thought he had a great chemistry with Derek Carr. I thought he was good with the Cowboys and they moved on with him. So I think that's part of the issue, right? I mean, my initial reaction was the Cowboys went from a position of strength to a position of weakness. That seems obvious. They traded a very good receiver, but I don't think there's a more important position in the NFL other than quarterback than the receiver position, and not just having one, but having four, right? Having four legitimate playmakers. I think we've seen that consistently through the years when the Chiefs, you know, the Chiefs' big weaknesses after the top two, who's three and four, right? The Bucs are attacking the receiver position. They need playmakers. I thought the Bills have done a great job at this the last couple of years, saying we're not going to let Josh Allen's years go by without having excellent playmakers around him. So it's a position I think you have to attack in volume. And I think when Dallas traded Amari Cooper, I'm thinking, okay, now they're working from behind. They had a position of strength where they had three legitimate receivers and a good emerging tight end in Dalton Schultz, and they've lost that advantage. How are they going to make up for it? And it's tough to just say, oh, we threw a third-round pick at Jalen Tolbert. I like Jalen Tolbert. He looked good at South Alabama. He's explosive. He attacks at the catch point. But to have – you're essentially trying to have him be Amari Cooper, or have a combination of him and James Washington be Amari Cooper – it's a really challenging thing to do, and I think the team got worse when they made that move for whatever was happening behind the scenes with, you know, souring on Amari and what he was bringing to the table.
Right. Just the reason I asked it is because they ended up trading Kim and his $20 million salary for a fifth-round pick. A few weeks later, we see this wide receiver market go insane, and that $20 million is actually not that bad anymore, and Dallas is looking around right now, and we're looking at that wide receiver group, like you said, and we're wondering how it's going to be come the start of the season. All right. For my last one, as someone who comes around as a news person, I'm going to go a little bit of a different route over here. We mentioned the guy before. I want to know, will the NFL allow Deshaun Watson to play on Friday? And the Browns announced that he's going to be starting. The NFL, from my understanding, does not want to see him on the field at all this year, and that includes the preseason. And it sounds like they're very adamant about it. We know they appealed the 6-game suspension. They're looking to get a full year suspension. Roger Goodell actually spoke to reporters on Wednesday, and when he was asked about Watson and why they want a full year, this was his answer. Let's play it over here.
Because we've seen the evidence. She was very clear about the evidence. She reinforced the evidence. That there was multiple violations here, and they were egregious, and it was predatory behavior. Those are things that we felt, we always felt were really important for us to address in a way that's responsible.
So yeah, so usually when Roger Goodell talks, he has a way of saying a lot of words, but not saying much. That was him being pretty clear about what's going on over here. And Roger Goodell appointed Peter C. Harvey to hear the appeal. And we have to make this clear. Harvey wasn't like jointly approved by the NFL and NFLPA. This is Goodell's guy. If Goodell wants a year, many people strongly believe Harvey will come down with a year. The question here is, when will he come down with that year suspension? Because if it happens today or early tomorrow, Watson immediately becomes ineligible to play in the preseason. If not, then there's nothing holding Watson back from playing on Friday night. So will the NFL go to Harvey and say, hey, this is supposed to be an expedited process, make this thing happen already, or will they let this thing play out and we'll be seeing Deshaun Watson playing on the football field for the first time in over, I believe it's 580 days since the last time he played in an actual NFL game. So I want to see if the NFL decides to push this thing to the finish line and have a decision in, because obviously the NFLPA will eventually sue. But if the year of suspension is in place, it takes him off the field, takes him off the training camp, and the NFL won't have to mind with him playing right now and having to hear about all of that. So I'm curious to see what happens here in the next day and a half.
And if they sue, is Watson immediately just eligible until they get through that? I mean, because it's not like an appeal of the suspension. It's just suing for, you know.
So I thought it was similar to how it happened with Ezekiel Elliott and how it happened with Tom Brady. But since they didn't initially appeal the 6-game suspension, to actually get a temporary restraining order, which would allow Watson to continue playing until everything gets figured out in court, it's far more difficult than when it was with Brady and Ezekiel Elliott. So from what it sounds like, at the moment right now, the 6 games are in place. Once the year is most likely coming in from Peter Harvey, that's in place as well. And the idea of getting a temporary restraining order sounds very, very unlikely. So while things could end up going to court and all of that, it sounds like Watson will regardless be sidelined at the very least for those first 6 games, which has already been ruled. And we'll see if it ends up getting to the full year after appeal, after the entire court process happened as well.
Yeah, the tricky part here is there's no precedent, right, of a guy that's suspended for 4 games or 6 games not playing in the preseason. It's usually you play in the preseason, and then as soon as the regular season starts, you go home, and you can't have contact with the team and all that stuff. And even that as a storyline for a quarterback is difficult. Like when Tom Brady had to deal with the suspension, think about the continuity that a quarterback and receiver has to have and all that stuff. Brady couldn't have any of that, and he came back and just had 1 week of practice and got to play. Jameis Winston that 1 year as well. I mean, that's just a football interesting side note on this. As far as the Watson stuff, yeah, I think the NFL wants to make this go away as fast as possible, right? Just get to the 1 year suspension. 1 year covers the preseason as well. The Browns would have no motivation to have Deshaun Watson play. Right now they have motivation for him to play because presumably they think he's going to be on the team by week 7. So they want him to, you know, be on the Browns. So you want to take away all that motivation. You want to take away the option to even have him in the preseason. Feels like a tough turnaround. Maybe we've got 24 hours basically for that to happen. Will that actually go through?
Yep. It'll be interesting to see what they do. Again, according to the CBA, whenever there is an appeal, it's supposed to be an expedited process. There is no official number of days on this thing. So it's essentially just words, but we'll see what ends up happening. But again, if it's a specific number of games, even if it's 15, he's allowed to play in the preseason. If it's a full year, he's gone. No training camp anymore. No preseason games at all. One last thing before I wrap this up while we're talking about the Browns. If Deshaun gets this full year suspension, should the Browns roll with Jacoby Brissett for a full year, or should they look into the idea of a Jimmy Garoppolo?
I would look at Garoppolo. I mean, it'd be reuniting the old Patriots, but I like Jacoby Brissett as a backup. I really think that's what he's settled in as. He's had 2 full years as a starter, graded just around 60 overall PFF grade. That's far below average. That was 2017 and 2019, where we got to see basically a full year of Jacoby Brissett. Now, last year, you see him in a backup role. He comes in, he plays pretty well for the Dolphins. I think, if you're going to roll, if you have 6 games of Deshaun Watson, six games of Brissett's fine. You know, I think you feel good about, okay, he could give us a chance to win for 6 games. I just don't think Brissett has shown that he can do it for the entire season. And you look at what Browns have built from a roster standpoint. They were a playoff team in 2020. They just missed the playoffs last year. They do have a good overall roster. They've done a great job in Cleveland, I think, just from a team building standpoint over the last 3 or 4 years. So I think it would be a wasted season. I don't hate Brissett, but I think you're upgrading if you bring in a Jimmy Garoppolo over Brissett as your starter.
That's the way I think most people are looking at it. And this is essentially now the third time that Jacoby Brissett has been in this type of a situation where he's being thrust into it because of a situation, whether it was Tom Brady suspension or the Andrew Luck retirement. And now here we are with the Deshaun Watson suspension, which right now is 6 games, will most likely be increased here in the coming days, maybe weeks. We'll see what ends up happening. But Steve, I want to thank you for coming on here on the show. Everyone can follow you on Twitter. It is at PFF_Steve. Of course, they could check out the PFF NFL podcast, which I'm sure it's only going to get busier and busier with a lot of topics going on here as the season officially gets started here tonight with the preseason, with games going out here tonight and throughout the weekend. And I'm sure the regular season will be here in no time. So Steve, thanks for coming on.
Yeah, thanks, Ari. Thanks for having me.